Hi there, and welcome to episode 321 of the Ski Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Martin, and today is the sixth and last in our series of Chamonix stories. If you are a regular listener, you'll know I was lucky enough to spend 2 months in Chamonix last winter. Episode 313 was a special on what makes the resort so special, from history to high mountain, glaciers to guides. But as I was interviewing people from around the valley, it soon became clear that I couldn't tell all their stories within that single episode. And so this series came together. Today is the sixth and last of those Chamonix stories, and even though it's a story from over 20 years ago, it's as dramatic as any I've told on the podcast. Regular listeners may recognise the voice of Sam Haddad. Sam is a freelance journalist who has been a guest on the Ski Podcast several times before, but back in the early 2000s, she was doing a season in Chamonix and decided to join a group on the famous off-piste route, the Vallée Blanche. I think it's safe to say the trip did not go as planned and, spoiler, Sam ended up in a crevasse and ultimately being helicoptered back to resort. I included a shortened version of this interview in episode 313 to illustrate the dangers of skiing and snowboarding in the high mountain, but I felt this story should be told in full. So let's find out what it's like when you fall into a crevasse on your first ever trip on the Vallée Blanche. Hi Sam, how are you?
Hey, yeah, nice to speak to you, Ian. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. It's always good to chat with you. You've been on the show many times before, but the reason I wanted to speak to you today is I know that you spent a lot of time in Chamonix, and during your time in Chamonix, you did have a bit of an experience on your first time going down the Vallée Blanche. I wondered if you could tell us about that.
Yeah, that was a funny one. So I'd started snowboarding the year before, fallen in love with Chamonix, given up everything I was doing in London to move out there and do a season. And in week one, so it's about the first week of the millennium, we hired a guide, I think about 12 to 14 of us, to do the Vallée Blanche. I was quite excited. I was a novice snowboarder, but good enough, I could stop at any time. But yeah, I was good enough to be doing it. We went down the route called Envers du Plain, so not the kind of more standard motorway route, because we had quite a lot of snowboarders in the group. So we needed a bit of steepness to keep us going. And it was, yeah, we did a few turns, beautiful. I can still picture it in my head. It was like a dreamy morning. The ridge part was obviously scary, but added to the adrenaline of it. And then we started to go, yeah, when we broke off to the left to the Envers du Plain route, I was at the back of the group. So I had a guide. I think I was the last person. So there was a guide at the front, guide at the back. And the guide had said to us, make sure you stay in our tracks. Don't go to the left or to the right of our tracks. But because I was quite far towards the back of the group, by then people were loosely following those tracks. But I think I was very much a novice in terms of big mountain, high alpine environment, that sort of sense. So I think I probably didn't take that literally enough. And so 1 minute I'm snowboarding, the next minute there's just the ground falls beneath me. My analogy that I say to friends was that 80s show, Jamie and the Magic Torch. Like it just felt like I was just going down this kind of helter-skelter slide, but with my board.
So you're just snowboarding along, and effectively, I guess you were going over a snow bridge or something, and it just collapsed beneath you. Is that what happened?
Yeah, so I put a toe turn in. So I suppose I pressed on my toe edge and my front side edge. I guess the force of that must have made a snow bridge, or later I would find out that it was a snow bridge and it collapsed beneath me.
Okay, and how far did you fall and how did you stop?
I just came to and I was just sitting on a ridge. It's the most crazy thing. My snowboard was scraping. So it wasn't like, there was a thud where my side of glute, my bum kind of hit some hard ice. But it wasn't like, I think they said 10 meters at the time. But I think it was a scraping and a bit of falling and a scraping. So when I remember it, it wasn't like I was bungee jumping down or anything like that. It was more crunch. And then I was left on this, ledge.
And I mean, this might be a silly question, I don't know, but what thoughts are going through your mind at that very point? Because I think time slows down.
I know, well, time does slow down, but then it also was quite quick. It's a weird one. Time is just, it was the blur of sound and things that I hadn't experienced. And at that moment, I don't think I was really thinking crevasse. I knew we were on a glacier and it was dangerous, but I didn't know what a crevasse was. I mean, I'd done geography at uni, so I should have done, but I obviously had no idea what the inside of a crevasse looked like. And it was this ice cave where I was sitting. I felt, as soon as I stopped, I felt completely safe on that ledge. I was stable. There was enough of a ledge that I felt safe. But when you look down, when I leant forward, there was the abyss. Not the abyss in an open way, but an abyss that if I'd pushed myself off of it, I could have kept going down these kind of bluey ice tunnels.
Okay, that sounds terrifying. So what happened next?
I got my phone out, which was one of those old Nokia, I can't remember what they were called. It was silver, so it was before they even had coloured Nokias. Zipped it out of my pocket, no reception, obviously. I think I'd only had the phone about 3 months or something. And I started to shout. My now husband, boyfriend, was in the group and had been the person in front of me. So I was shouting his name, James, to no avail. But I haven't really got much concept of time, but it wasn't very long before there was a snow hole with some lights diagonally to my right. And it actually wasn't very long before it felt like a dog burrowing. And it was actually the guide that had been behind me who had seen what had happened. And he stuck his head down. Yeah, so it's hard to know how long. Like, I think it was long enough. Like, I was sort of being, but fine, but not really crying. I was just a bit like, I don't know. Yeah, like it was enough to be stressful, but I didn't think it was the end of my life at that point, at any point.
For sure, but the adrenaline is flying around. And then presumably, yeah. Okay, they located you, yeah. They lowered down a rope, you're already wearing a harness. Do you know how to clip it in? Are they giving you instructions?
Yeah, so that bit was all. Yeah, so as soon as they were there, yeah, I did feel quite safe. So they roped in. Yeah, harness goes to me straight away first. And then it was like, take your board off. We'll put, and I think they maybe sent another rope for the board. So then the board comes up and they drag me out. That bit itself was quite painless, actually. I guess they will have had someone else. The other guide will have come up by that stage.
Sure. And are you doing on Verdeplan and you're on the steep a bit and that's near the top? Mm-hmm. There's no choice. You've got to get to the bottom. Yeah, it must be quite weird putting your board back on and going up.
Yeah, and do you know what it is as well? Like snowboarders of that age or just friends, but everyone was like quite irritated apparently with me. They thought I'd just fallen over. So they were all like waiting. It was already quite an unwieldy group. People were going at different paces. There were maybe some faster people. So I think that there was a bit of fuss. Yeah, so they gave me a sweet tea, faced me away. I always remember they faced me away from where it had happened to help with the shock. And I think then like I had under the ground, I had been quite cool. And then it was starting to hit me a bit, but put the snowboard on. Started to snowboard, fell over straight away. It happened 3 or 4 times because my legs were so tense. And this was, by then, it was like a lovely field of powder. There weren't, like, I don't think we were on the side. Like, it was all completely fine. I did manage to hold it together enough to get to the refuge. And that was when we told people what had happened. So they started being a bit less moany about the fact, yeah, they were having to wait. They were like, it was all jokey, but it was a bit like, oh, fuck's sake. It was a bit like that. We got to the refuge, but then, and then, yeah, I hadn't actually been crying earlier. I'd been like stressed. Then I started suddenly crying and felt quite emotional. Got this soup down me. And then I tried to stand up and my leg had completely seized up. I had this big sort of hematoma. And that was when I said to the guide, yeah, not sure I'm going to make it down.
So you mean from that point, you got to the buvette. I think it was a little while ago. The glacier was a bit higher and easier to get to. And then you would have skied or snowboarded down from there. So you didn't do that. What happened from that point then?
Yeah, there was still going to be quite a long way down. I mean, I can't remember what they were talking about in time. And it was also, it had been quite a rubbish winter so far. So it was quite icy. So it wasn't that kind of nice snowboardy in the tracks. So the guide, we had a discussion with the guide and he said, well, yeah, I think I had insurance. I think you should get a helicopter down from here. So that was like, okay, well, yeah, but yes, because we didn't really know what I'd done. We knew that it was very painful. It didn't seem like anything was broken, but that, yeah, I wasn't, like, I couldn't really walk properly. It was all very stiff. So the helicopter comes, and then that was the funny bit, because then by then the wind had picked up a bit, and when I went off in the helicopter, all my friends had come out to watch, and they said that almost looked more dangerous than the crevasse, because it went really close to the cliff side with me in it and then shot off. So, yeah, that was kind of a quite a dramatic. Yeah, it took me to the hospital and it turned out I'd just got a hematoma. Yeah.
Wow. And so I've got to ask you, have you done the Vallée Blanche again since then?
Yeah, so I did it again that season with a guide, but probably not until much later. And then, yeah, only that one time. Actually, I wanted to do it once so that it wasn't a thing. I did a lot of Grandmonte. I did top of Grandmonte. So it wasn't like I was scared of glaciers generally, but I think, yeah, even now I'm not like itching. I don't know.
The fact is though, Sam, You did do it again. A lot of people would have never gone near it. And I think that probably says a lot for your character and a really important thing to do as well. Yeah. That it's an amazing story. Evidently delighted that, you know, it worked out. Yeah. And a warning tale perhaps for other people when the guide says, follow in my tracks.
Yeah. And I think, it didn't put me off snowboarding, like close to that. Like I think I was even snowboarding like 2 days late and going all that. Like I was still... Yeah, people did say to me, did it not make you want to not do a season or anything like that? It was a cool story to tell people. Like, I enjoyed meeting people and then being like, you a crevasse girl. It was a sort of great, USP in those early days.
Cool. That's brilliant, Sam. Thanks for sharing that with us.
No problem. Nice to see you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed Sam's story. I love getting feedback from our listeners. So if you did enjoy this episode or you have any comments, please do let me know. You can do that by leaving a comment on Spotify, Instagram or Facebook, or drop me an email to theskipodcast@gmail.com. We're also on WhatsApp. I release exclusive material ahead of each episode there. Look in the show notes for all those links. I have had feedback from several listeners since our last episode. Simon Burgess enjoyed my chat with Jono Jacobs about Ronin skis in episode 319, especially his approach to sustainability. Really enjoyed this one, Simon said. It's nice to know there are manufacturers aiming for longevity, not just another sale. And Colin Tierney contacted me about episode 318's interview with Shemi Alcott. Shemi shouldn't feel embarrassed. He's talking about her reaction to Lindsay Vonn's awful injury. Plus, he says, I'm off to Landgraaf in November to enjoy the longer slope indoors and Pila in March. Have you got access to my ski calendar? As we covered both of those two destinations in 318 as well. There are now 321 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with, and a whopping 261 of those were listened to in the last week alone. That's probably because there's a lot of listeners bringing some winter into their lives to escape the heat of summer, and you can do that too. Just go to theskipodcast.com, have a search around the tags and categories, and I'm sure you will find something of interest to listen to from that back catalogue of over 300 episodes. If you did enjoy this week's episode, I'm just going to make one request. The single best thing you can do for the show is to share it with just one person who you think would get something out of it. I'm not asking for a review, a follow, or a donation. Just send this episode to one person who you think would enjoy it. Right, I'll be back next week with another regular episode when we'll be finding out about a skier in France that very few people know about. Plus, we'll be exploring the rise of alcohol-free ski trips. Yep, that's right, alcohol-free. So until then, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.